The Guardian.
Hello all, James Richardson here, and before we get started with today's edition of Football Weekly, I'm going to point you in the direction of our sponsor Squarespace. For more about building beautiful websites, go to squarespace.com. And now, on with the show. Football Weekly today, North London Derby sees Leicester come out best at 2 points, 3 points, 5 points. Foxes' lead continues to grow. Leicester pressure? Make that less to worry about as Ranieri's rivals head into tough midweek matches, Hull and Dortmund, while they head to the pizzeria. Elsewhere, disturbance in force for Man United's challenge, that is. On a crucial West Brom corner, they try not to leave anyone unmarked, but altogether now, they do Rondon, though. They do Rondon. We've Champions League and Europa League previews as Man United travel to Anfield and Chelsea take on PSG. And oh yes, Dortmund take on Spurs. Plus, we've got news from the arse end of the Premier League. Crisis talks. Will Stevie walk as Newcastle virgin on the ridiculous after losing with Cherries? All of that, plus Paul's music news in this Football Weekly. Hello to Paul McInnes.
Hello there, James.
Great to see you, Paul.
Great to see you too.
Great to see Simon Burnton.
Hi.
Philippe Auclair, again, sporting the exciting knitwear.
Absolutely.
What? How? Now, last time there was a kind of tradition, was it?
Norwegian.
Norwegian, mm-hmm. Yeah. Today's is from what?
It's actually British.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay.
It's like a posh design or something.
Absolutely. That much I guessed. Anyway, thank you so much for wearing it for us, Philippe. What was your favourite goal this weekend, Philippe?
My favourite goal? Oh, what a question.
Simon?
I know my favourite miss.
Oh.
Did you see the Brian Ruiz miss?
I didn't.
And it was the big Benfica Sporting Lisbon match.
Yeah.
Yeah, Brian Ruiz missed an absolutely beautiful, wonderful open goal from 4 yards.
Wow.
Of skied his shot over the bar.
How ironic, because it was another former Fulham hero who actually scored the winner in that game. Kostas Mitroglou.
Indeed.
Yeah. Which
by the way,
Benfica top of the table, ye table, against, in the biggest match, you know, possible, because it was against their old manager, Jorge Jesus, who'd gone across town in shocking news. Somebody compared this to Sir Alex Ferguson leaving Man United and going to Liverpool, which I think gives you the sense. Sorry, Philippe.
Yes, two things. Harry Kane's goal, of course.
Right.
Yes.
Yep.
And second thing, when you say ye, the Y-E.
Oh, did I?
Yes, you did. And it's not pronounced ye, it's pronounced the. The Y in Anglo-Saxon is pronounced the.
Getting lessons on your own language from a Frenchman. How does it feel?
Right. Well, essentially, it is the same. You know, it's their language, probably. We just borrowed bits.
I have to say, talking of getting English lessons off a Frenchman.
Yes.
Watching Match of the Day 2 yesterday.
Ah.
Van Gaal used the phrase rhetorical question. And I just thought, who are you? You'll probably speak 4 languages, coming over here, using our complicated idioms. Humiliating us with your excellent English.
It's a distraction technique.
It's funny because you just asked a rhetorical question with that. Who are you coming over here? Yeah. Anyway, Paul, we haven't heard yet from you about your
goal of the.
Yes.
Well, I was thinking about it. I think it's pretty obvious, but I think I'd go for Mahrez.
Yeah, Mahrez.
I just like the way he slightly. I mean, he drove that, but he also feathered it. It was just a little delicate combination of technique, which I very much admired.
Yeah, I would have thought you'd gone for Lacazette's goal in Lyon's astonishing 5-1 slamming.
You know, you know me, mate.
But maybe we'll talk about that later on. North London Derby, which featured the Kane goal. And also, I'm surprised, Aaron Ramsey. That was a bit special, his little back heel flick.
Yeah, and I must say that when we were watching it, at the beginning we thought it was a fluke. And it's only when we watched it again we thought actually probably meant that. Perhaps not to strike the ball with such velocity, but certainly there was intent there.
Everyone had been having a go at Ramsey. He didn't score any goals. Everybody can dribble around him. No player in the Premier League gets dribbled past more than Ramsey, apparently, this season. And he scored that wonderful goal which put Arsenal in the driving seat, at least until the Coquelin incident.
Yes. Yes.
Were you at White Hart Lane?
Yeah, I was, absolutely. And enjoyed it tremendously, I must say. Probably, yeah, my game of the season so
really?
Far. Yeah.
Quality perhaps wise, with the West, perhaps not.
No, but in terms of intensity, it was absolutely relentless. And, you know, some of the goals were not bad either. And, yeah, as you said, it probably all hinged on that incident in the 55th minute when Coquelin stupidly basically he bit the bait. Harry Kane probably was looking for the foul. He went for it stupidly and got his just desserts. And the expression, actually, as he left the field, because, you know, at Wat Khan in the press box is literally just behind the manager's bench and next to the entrance to the dressing room, and we could see the expression on Coquelin's face, and he didn't look very happy bunny, happy with himself, that is. Coquelin cocked it up.
Oh, yeah.
It was the theme of the weekend, really, two yellow card sendings off deciding matches. I can't really remember.
Or not.
I mean, in one case, the team massively improved after the red card, but I can't really
Liverpool.
Remember.
Liverpool. One matter, not so much.
So, matter.
I mean, we'll have to talk about this, perhaps.
We'll come on to that later, yeah. But your reference, I suspect, your cagey reference there, is the fact that Spurs' Dier didn't get the second year.
No, he didn't, but neither did Bellerin, so...
Okay.
Yeah.
Listen, as much as Coquelin was to blame for, you know, things not working out for Arsenal, how about Per Mertesacker before Kane's goal? Just going, you know what, that ball's going out, I can't be bothered.
Was he not running as fast as he can?
Possibly, yeah.
Well, yes, okay, but this doesn't detract from the fact that Dele Alli was very clever, very astute to make that back heel. And then I couldn't say that. When people say, oh, Mertesacker's error led to the goal, yes. I mean, that goal, you won't see many better strikes than this one. From that angle, almost Canu-esque, almost.
From Kane. So only one letter of difference.
Because apart from that, Mertesacker had actually an excellent game.
Okay.
And I'll defend him.
As did Gabriel, which is, you know, the player who's coming into form after you know, indifferent first 12 months of his
in
career.
In many ways, and there were plenty of positives. You know, Spinner didn't do badly. Hey, I saw a stat that said that he made more saves than any Arsenal goalkeeper in a Premier League match has made since 2009.
Yeah, he made 9 saves. And 2 of them were bordering on the exceptional.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So he did well. Ramsey, did he do better? Or was it just the goal?
To be honest, I would say the goal was magnificent, but no, it didn't impress me particularly.
Oh, right. Okay.
He did quite a, you know, he doesn't have to get dribbled around so much if he's playing on the right-hand side, but he likes to come in and play in the centre. So he did help out Elneny, who was excellent.
Oh, yes.
To kind of provide more solidity in that midfield. So I think he did a job for the team. But on the other hand, what you're saying about Ospina there, I think Spurs played well. Spurs should have managed that game out, and obviously they were very frustrated at the end. But they did, for the majority of the match, about 15 minutes after the Arsenal goal aside, they dominated the game. And they didn't create numerous clear-cut chances, but it was such a tight game that it might have required one moment of real skill, so like a Dele Alli backheel or something to make that difference. And that's that situation that Spurs have been in quite a lot this season, I think, playing against packed defences.
Do you think as well that they're maybe a little bit tired, Spurs? They're a hard-working team, and we've talked about how many extra fixtures they had.
They certainly, towards the end of the game, so the last 15, 20 minutes, you didn't see the same energy. It has to be said that they started at a very, very high pace. But as Pochettino was telling us afterwards, it was their 41st game this season.
Wow.
And we are not we're just the beginning of March. And some of his players, I think, have played already 44 or 45 games because of also the games with the national teams. Mm-hmm. So, there was a little bit of tiredness. It should also be said, by the way, coming back to Arsenal, When we saw the team sheet, I have to say nobody was expecting that at all. I don't think I've ever seen that Arsenal team and shaping in that kind of way, where you had two genuine holding midfielders, Elneny and Coquelin, Ramsey on the right, Sanchez on the left, and Welbeck preferred to Giroud or Walcott up front.
Now,
he was excellent, Welbeck, by the way.
He was.
Missed a chance, missed
and
a very
yet,
good
when
chance.
When Giroud came on, the team seemed to get a lift from that as well.
Yes, there was, but also in very, you know, Spurs were...
Fading a bit,
by that time. And it's quite strange, actually, that the last 15 minutes, you don't see that very often, but Arsenal, playing 10v11, were actually, every time the ball was going out of play, they were really quick to try it. You know, not at all, too old, fantastic, let's keep it. No, they thought they could win.
Well, big chance was it for Ramsey at the end?
Yeah, at the very end, yes, absolutely.
All right. Kevin Griffin, looks like you picked the wrong week to ask for less Arsenal chat. Hey. Here's Johnny Blaine saying, what Spurs need right now is two legs against Dortmund. Wow, that's what's coming up on Thursday. We'll talk about that in a second. I just want to move on to Leicester. As many people have pointed out, the big winners of the North London derby is they move 5 points clear. Now, you were at their game at Watford Simon Burton. How about that Mahrez goal, huh?
Lovely goal, a terrible defensive header that led to it. Mahrez controlled it beautifully, scored with a wonderful shot right into the top corner. And I kind of went, I've been to other Leicester games this season when I've been working and had, obviously very busy when you're writing a match report on a live match. And this one I just watched. And I was kind of looking for a reason to dislike them. Were they going to dive around or harass the referee, or were their fans going to be obnoxious? Or, you know, there's nothing there. You know, I looked and found nothing. And it's interesting that they win games, or impressive that they can win games in many different ways. You know, they can rip teams apart, as they did, I guess, at Manchester City. They can, you know, there was the hoof-headed winner at Tottenham, the Mahrez goal on Saturday. They can put on several different hats and look very fetching in all of them. Vardy, yeah, his movement was exceptional, but he missed one really splendid chance and otherwise wasn't enormously influential in the game. It was kind of the central midfield engine room. Drinkwater was excellent. King came on at half-time, played well. Basically, they showed some other facets to their team other than the ones that have been getting.
Right.
You can also say, you can also say about Watford, though. I mean, Watford gave a largely very assured performance.
Mm. Watford were perhaps, because of Leicester's successes early in the season, weren't given the credit they deserved, but also they're getting a lot of criticism at the moment because of a lack of goals. I mean, obviously, they haven't been taking their chances, but they have been playing pretty well, and particularly against Manchester United last Wednesday, they played, I mean, really, it was probably, you know, up with Liverpool as their greatest performance of the season. They're still playing fine. They're still competitive. You know, as a Watford supporter, I'm still being encouraged.
Yeah.
You know, although we've slipped in the last few weeks from higher mid-table to lower mid-table.
And that was a tight game against the league leaders, which was decided on a single moment. And that you can't really ask for much more than that. And I think it's indicative of actually the quality of the Prem this season.
Mm, absolutely. All right, here's Oliver Thomas flagging up a Lest We Forget star moment. Football Trolls, who've done the research, said 4 years ago, where were you? 4 years ago, someone will tell you, Jamie Vardy, he was playing for Halifax Town. Riyad Mahrez was playing for Le Havre's reserves. N'Golo Kante was playing in the eighth tier of French football.
We had an article on that Troy Deeney goal for Watford against Leicester in the playoffs a couple of years ago that made the point that on the bench for Leicester that day, unable to get in their team, Harry Kane and Jamie Vardy.
couple of things. First of all, Dauphin perhaps our cap to Mr. Ranieri and his substitutions, which worked magnificently.
Right.
I thought Schlupp was very, very impressive as well. Mm. The second thing, there are only two players, because you mentioned the name of one of them, Andy King, two players who are aged 27 years or more, who've been with one club all through their career in England, in the Premier League.
There are only two.
One of them is Andy King.
Oh, don't tell us the other.
No, but who is the other?
I don't know. So how long have we got until, what, like part three? You can play at home or wherever you're enjoying this podcast, listeners. Another player, Philippe, age 27 or more, who's been at the same club right through his career.
Absolutely.
I'm going to say John Terry.
It is not John Terry, because John Terry went out on loan to Nottingham Forest.
Nottingham Forest, did he? Oh, okay. Right. Oh, back to Leicester City, unless you wanted to say something else.
No.
Right. Their remaining games, there's only 9 games left. And, of course, Arsenal could have as many as 16, although probably they'll have fewer because of Barcelona. And Spurs, I didn't count them, but could be loads. Don't know. But Leicester, just 9 games left. The league position of their remaining opponents, 19th, 15th, 8th, 17th, 5th, 16th, 6th, 11th and 10th. That's pretty good, isn't it?
But that 10th is Chelsea.
Yeah, so the last day they're going to be away at Chelsea, while Spurs will be at titter Newcastle. Arsenal will be hosting, grab your sides here, Aston Villa. And Man City, if they're still in this mix, I don't know, they're going to be at Swansea. But so, yeah, you'd Leicester, if you're a fan of them, you'd want to be 3 points clear, possibly more given Spurs' goal difference, going into that final day.
The Leicester also, the last 3 games are Everton, Manchester United and
Chelsea.
And Chelsea, yes. Right. So that's pretty tough.
9 points clear then, listeners. 9 points clear. Yeah. Anyway, well, we're talking about all the extra games that people have. Of course, Arsenal will be travelling to Hull in the FA Cup for the fifth round replay. 0-0. Is he? He's going to put the first team out for that, is he?
I think he has no choice.
What's he saying?
Steve Bruce.
I was referring to Arsene Wenger, but you're right. That's the...
Has he got the choice? You know, when you've won the FA Cup twice in a row, you stand on the cusp of perhaps doing it for the third time, which hasn't been done ever, I think. Hat-trick of wins, perhaps Villa in the old days when Ramsey was the manager. I'm not too sure even about that. But, yeah, so he's bound to do that. I mean, the title, bye-bye.
No.
Yeah.
You think? Oh, no, come on, Philippe.
8 points?
Eight points. But we've just heard about Leicester's running. But
one thing you can be sure of, if Arsenal comes back into the race, they'll find a way to trip themselves over.
That's right. That's almost right. Because this season, you've got to anticipate that there's going to be twists and turns to come because there's been so many of them. But there's enough games to go that you can have a twist and turn and then another twist and turn and another twist and turn to leave you right back where you started.
Right. I'm looking forward to that. Anyway, Arsenal away at the KC Stadium, which is a sexy fixture, but not as sexy as Spurs and their little journey to the Westfalen Stadion and the Yellow Wall and all that, and Borussia Dortmund. It's the first time these two teams have met. Dortmund drew 0-0 with Bayern at the weekend, and they've only had one defeat in their last 10. Wow, they're scary. I mean, especially their pace up front. Those three players, Bellarabi, deadly on set pieces. Mm-hmm. Mkhitaryan, creative. But, I mean, Aubameyang.
Aubameyang, yes.
Aubameyang.
Yeah, African Player of the Year, which didn't please Yaya Touré too much, as we remember.
Right, yeah. but well-deserved, no? I mean, his goal.
Oh, yes, no, absolutely. Another player that Ligue 1 let go.
Yeah?
Yet another one, yeah. I mean, as to this game, I must say, I don't know what to expect at all, because also Pochettino up till now has rotated quite a lot in the Europa League. And, you know, I would imagine not many people would disagree with me when I say that, but whoever wins that tie has got a good chance to go all the way.
Right.
But at the same time, I think it would be odd if Pochettino was to prioritise this at this point. Yeah. Even with 5 points, I think you'll see Trippier and Davies come in at full back.
Which, by the by, is not bad at all.
No, and what we're talking about, the tiredness and stuff, and I think that's true, but they've also rotated the squad very, you know, Harry Kane aside.
Particularly the full backs, yeah.
Yeah, the full backs, but also, you know, Son and Lamella. And
Chadli coming Chadli in, absolutely.
Have flicked in and around, and they've Ryan also Mason. changed the central midfield engine room as well, despite it, you know, but Dyer's pretty much a constant.
Dele Alli is, I believe, suspended for that fixture.
I can confirm that, Philippe.
Thank
and
you.
We all know how Spurs struggle without him. I think I remember reading that 6 games they've had without him this season, they've only won one of them. Really looking forward to that tie. It's going to be fascinating, though.
Mm. Well, it's, yeah.
And Spurs look great against Fiorentina.
They did.
Very impressed with that.
Son has scored 5 goals in his last 5 games against Borussia.
Of course, Son back in the Bundesliga.
Yeah. So playing for both Hamburger and Bayer Leverkusen.
Right.
5-5. Quite a good run.
Nice.
Yeah. Also, Mkhitaryan has hit woodwork in the Europa League.
Right.
As many times as any other team.
Right. Right. And listeners reminding me, actually, over the course of the weekend, that's not bad luck. That's just bad aim.
Indeed.
So his aim's not very good, essentially.
He's got bad aim.
He's got bad aim. Really looking forward to that game on Thursday. And there's another very exciting game, of course, that day or that evening. Liverpool Man United, also in the Europa League.
Isn't it funny to think that after all this time of these European competitions, it's the first time Liverpool and Manchester United have faced each other?
I guess, although you know, normally they keep teams from the same country as far apart as possible. But sometimes it just happens.
Yes,
I was surprised. I was surprised when that.
Given that Liverpool have played Chelsea several times.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So what I'm saying is nonsense. Example. You're right.
It is very played Chelsea, and Chelsea played Man United, but not the not this one. The most totemic of English football fixtures.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We'll talk about that, shall we?
Why don't
a little
we?
Bit later on, when we'll also be hearing your music news, I understand, Paul. And Philippe will no doubt be unveiling the answer to his exciting trivia question. Before any of that, though, after this, Chelsea Stoke. Well, if you, like me, listener, are a fan of good music, then you'll enjoy this, as Paul McInnes does music news. Is this since the Guardian cutbacks forced the closure of Music Weekly?
Yeah, but that happened a long time ago. That was done on quality grounds.
Oh, yeah, all right.
Yeah. Oh, no, that was my sacking that was on quality grounds. It wasn't. Alexis Petridis's podcasts were quality.
He's great, isn't he?
He's brilliant.
He's good.
So put that to one side.
Yep.
This is sort of, it's not really news, it's anti-news.
Is this when Ben revealed that Stone Roses are at?
Now, thanks, Paul. Music news becomes James's music news.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Paul. Tell us the news.
So I come into work on Friday and I have a guy who's kind of my vintage, like really excited about new Stone Roses material. I'm like, I don't give much of a fig, but I'm excited for you. And he said, but it's still unconfirmed. Could you check, because you're the journalist, could you go find this source? Because apparently it's a Guardian journalist who said, tweeted enigmatically about Stone Roses and put the date on it. And then he goes, yeah, it's this guy called Ben Green. I'm like, Ben Green? It's been going. So Ben, so what have you been messaging him? Like, Ben, what have you been doing? Kind of, how do you know about the Stone Roses? He goes, I know about it. And Podcast Master, my series of podcasts on how to be a podcaster, it's up to episode number 5 and it's coming out on Friday. And I'm like, yeah, okay, fair enough. But what I want to know is about the new Stone Roses material, which you know about, don't you? He goes, yep, I totally know about that. Podcast Master, episode number 5. And we have this sort of back and forth for about an hour until it becomes apparent that he doesn't have a clue what I'm talking about. He thinks I'm joking. And he never made this tweet, never deleted it, but has been... I can't remember where it was. It started off on sort of fan sites. It went to GigWise in the end. Which is really, it was on the Enemy. That even made it to Newsweek in the end, where people were kind of getting really excited based on a deleted tweet, which Ben didn't even write.
Is there any new Stone Roses?
No, there is not.
So what have we just been talking about?
And we've been talking... It's not, I think, labelling it music news. It's more like... faux virality news,
right? Involving that's actually, you know, that's an important lesson.
Yeah,
important lesson about something.
The nature of internet celebrity or truth in the internet age.
Truth, what is it? I was going to talk about Chelsea Stoke, but truth, what
Let's
is it?
Talk about
Does have
truth.
A certain ring to it, Simon? What's your truth about Chelsea conceding that goal against Stoke and ending up 1-1? A weakened Chelsea side. Is the truth here? Is the veracity of this result that Chelsea actually weren't asked because they got PSG on Wednesday, so they rested people like Diego Costa?
Possibly. Mm. I mean, obviously, Diego Costa didn't play. They may have been aware of quite how many players PSG were going to be resting over the weekend.
How many? Combien de
About 16. Slight exaggeration. Almost everybody bar Di Maria and perhaps Cavani, who might play on Wednesday. Mm. But apart from that, it was very much a C team, I would say.
Paris Saint-Germain, the only team to have beaten this incarnation of Gus Hiddink's Chelsea.
Correct.
But only 2-1, so Chelsea have an away goal. Mm-hmm. And I think if you wanted to give Chelsea supporters cause for optimism, you might talk about the fact that PSG, have they taken their foot off the gas a little bit?
Yes, they have. I mean, they were beaten by a very good Lyon side.
Right.
They drew 0-0 against Montpellier, but as we said, you know,
not a very good Montpellier.
Not a very good Montpellier, but a game in which, you know, it was Paris Saint-Germain in name, and that was about it. Hmm. And obviously, they're totally obsessed about this fixture against Chelsea. I mean, it's the only thing that seems to matter because everybody knows they will be champions. So yes, they've let their foot off the gas in the league, no doubt about that. Even though, I mean, you saw Lyon against PSG. Lyon had a real go at them and didn't like it a jot. And you would have thought that out of pride and perhaps the genuine possibility of going through a whole season unbeaten would have seen them react in a better fashion, perhaps, than they did. But they were not able to do so.
Do you think that's an issue for PSG, really, the mental thing? They're being, you know, we hear sometimes it's difficult to switch on and switch it off, the attitude. Yeah. And also, they lack
criteria to judge exactly how good they are.
Yeah.
Their only criterion so far has been the first game against Chelsea, where they were excellent at times and played some really beautiful football. But also they... Well, there's the Blaise Matuidi being out, which is very bad news for them. Some uncertainty about Verratti. I don't know if you've heard more about that, but he seemed to be not so well. Mm. And there's a great deal of nervousness in the Parisian camp at the moment, and not just among the supporters. You feel it's going through the club and think, yeah, we won 2-1, but, you know, remember, 2 years ago, they won 3-1. And they lost 2-0.
Yeah.
They know what it's like.
It's their third consecutive year of playing Chelsea.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the last two have both been decided on away goals.
Yes.
And maybe they just feel that result wasn't quite enough.
Yes. I think there's very much that. Also, they remember that Chelsea actually also had a very decent performance at the Parc des Princes.
Yeah.
And you know, Hazard is back, definitely. They will have they look at all that. And Nemanja Matic will be back as well, who was suspended for the first leg. So, you know, full squad to choose from almost, apart from Pedro.
Well, yeah, Pedro's out, and John Terry, and Zuma, of course.
Yeah.
And also Pato won't be available, so they'll miss him.
Well, they'll miss him terribly, won't they?
A Paris midfield without Matuidi or Verratti would be quite significantly.
That would be, if both were out, I would say, even though, you know, Rabiot is a very decent player, mm-hmm. Thiago Motta is a very, very good player indeed.
Well, Motta, and one who's had a big impact on the Champions League at Stamford Bridge before now.
Yep.
And
had a big impact as well on several players in the French league, but let's not talk about that.
Oh,
naughty, naughty boy, naughty boy. But yes, you're absolutely right. If those two were to miss out, I think they would have genuine reasons to be concerned. Also, they're ultra favourites. I mean, there's no doubt about that.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
For the first time.
Well, that game's coming up on Wednesday.
Ooh, it's going to be
hot. You mentioned their defeat to Lyon. That was, the round before last.
Yeah.
Terrific performance from Lyon, who suddenly rediscovered their verve under their new manager.
Yeah, five wins in six.
Lacazette scoring again.
Yeah, and Gazal as well.
Right.
Very, very good indeed. And the really exciting news, Nabil Fekir is back in training.
Just in time for them to sell him in the summer.
Yes, there's that, of course. But and also in time for Didier Deschamps to think perhaps, you know, who knows, Fekir.
Yeah, okay. Well, they're up into third place now behind Monaco.
Yeah, 6 points behind Monaco, who could only draw at Caen, 2-2. So, you know, in bonne dynamique, as we say in French, you know, there's a chance that they might catch up. Because remind our listeners that it's only the first two spots which guarantee automatic qualification for the group phase of the Champions League. But no, they're very, very promising. It's out of nowhere, really, because remember them at the beginning.
Well, they changed that manager, didn't they?
Yeah, I don't think just that. I think there's
some
players,
Sergi
Darda, there's the new stadium. Some players, you know, like the Spaniard, Sergi Darda, plays.
Great goal he scored.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, fantastic, yes. Coup du sombrero. I don't know how you say that in.
Sombrero, I think people would say.
Sombrero. Trick, you say that now in English? Okay.
Yeah.
Tekkers.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they, you know, he's been very influential. They paid a lot of money for him. And he wasn't really, you know, he wasn't used to what was happening in Ligue 1, obviously, clearly.
Right. Well, there were a lot of rifts as well within the locker room, they were saying.
Yeah.
But I was just going to ask you, Philippe, speaking of selling people in the summer, if you had to pick out one player from Ligue 1
You're going to talk about Monsieur Dembélé.
Ousmane Dembélé.
Yeah, well, Ousmane Dembélé. He's only 18 years old, and he plays for Rennes under Roland Courbis, and he scored a hat-trick.
This weekend?
Yeah.
Because he's already been, you know, people getting quite excited about him.
Well, with every reason.
Should we believe the hype?
We should believe the fact that most of Europe's greatest clubs have sent scouts to watch him a number of times. And last game, I think you know which scouts were there. Those from FC Barcelona.
Yeah. In my mind, Barcelona scouts are kind of like a little bit like Jawas from Star Wars, like quite short, and they speak in their own language. So they just huddle there, jumping up and down excitedly when they see this player, who I believe grew up down the road from Anthony Martial in the banlieue of Paris, and is, by French, you know, popular opinion in France, even more excited than Martial was at his age, which actually wasn't that exciting because people weren't that big on Martial until he...
No. But Martial at the age of 18, I mean, was not having such an impact on Monaco at all.
How old was Aubameyang when he got picked up by Milan?
Good question.
And he was not too dissimilar age, was he?
I don't know the answer, I have to say.
Anyway.
But you have to say Aubameyang, I mean, there was a lot of promise, but many people thought is what we call in French a tout droit. This one player is very, very, very quick, and that's the only thing he can do is what Emmanuel Rivière, for example, did for about 2 days in his career with Monaco, which is run very, very fast, and with a bit of luck, he'll score. But he's obviously taken a new dimension.
Nice segue into the Newcastle story there.
Absolutely.
There you go.
Here we go. Here's the ball.
Yes, right. You run with it.
Crossfield pass.
I swing at it and miss because I want to talk about the other Champions League games. You got your Wolves, but yeah, that's looking like a name to follow. Then Ousmane Dembele.
Let's show it to us.
There you go, from the very talented Dembele family.
He looks fetching.
Other Champions League games this week.
Team of Dembeles. Could you do that?
Probably.
Spurs are quite keen. I think they've got one. They want another. Uh-huh. Might as well just keep going.
Not the one from Fulham.
Yeah, they want the Fulham.
Oh, they want the Fulham. But maybe they could have three Dembeles in their team.
They should force him to change his name to Musa, but just add a third S in. So you've got the 1S, 2S, 3Ss, and that's how you know to distinguish them.
In other news, Wolfsburg will be taking on Ghent. Wolfsburg, a little bit nervous, because remember they were 3-0 up against Ghent, who are kind of like the Leicester of the Champions League, a team that survived kind of massive financial difficulties. Nobody gave them a chance in the first time in this competition, but they finished the group stages with a storming run of results. I think they won their last three. They then came up against Wolfsburg, looked like they were way out of their depth, went 3-0 down, Julian Drax looking particularly sharp. But then two goals in the last 10 minutes have brought this one back to 3-2, but they're going to be at Wolfsburg, that's that game there. Wolfsburg,
you have to say that's exactly the sort of thing we don't want to see in the Champions League.
Absolutely.
And the sooner we get a fixed terms and conditions that can boot those sorts out, the better.
Charlie Stilitano saying similar things this weekend.
Oh, really? Yeah. Interesting. Sounds like a smart guy.
I think he is a smart guy. He's from the world of American sports.
Yes.
Where they know a thing or two.
I can't get over the name of his bloody company.
What's the name of his bloody company?
Relevant, but spelt with an E as in real event.
Oh. Relevant. Real event.
And for people who would like to tell, I mean, I've tweeted that, but just in case you want to let Mr. Stilitano know what where he can put his project, there's an email address. It's info@relevant.com, I think it is.
Well, in just his defense, he didn't say that, you know, this wasn't a project that he's got for European football. He just said, in America, we do it this way. And there are pluses to having the
which is complete utter bollocks, because if you look at what's happening, for example, for the Super Bowl,
right,
you will notice that the number of teams which were nowhere 2 years before and suddenly, they're in the biggest event in American
but that's
sport,
because,
and it changes every year.
Well, yeah, but that's because instead of relegation, they have this system whereby poor performances are rewarded by high draft picks, which you can't really implement in Europe because we don't have a draft. But anyway, yeah, when he came
out, some teams are better supported than others.
Saying, you know, Leicester would be bad news for the Champions League. You
and
just
also
think
saying how much
on
he felt
what
sorry
planet?
For the big clubs and their inability to maximise their revenue from European competition. Yeah. It's like they're drowning in money, these people. They don't need any more.
Yeah. And also, should be extremely grateful for the likes of Leicester, because it's them who make the whole thing interesting.
Yeah. They? And also, I think he said something about the club which created soccer. Is it Manchester United or Leicester? As a matter of fact, Leicester Fosse was founded in 1884, I believe.
So, Burn Stilitano, that's a takedown from Philippe Clair.
And of course, Newton Heath, I think they were created a couple of years before that, but they only became Manchester United quite, you know, a few years behind.
Yeah, I call that relevant. Uh-huh. Spelt properly as well.
Okay.
Also in Champions League news this midweek, Real Madrid taking on Roma. Roma buoyed as they travel to the Bernabeu by a 4-1 victory over their rivals for third place, Fiorentina. That is, Philippe, their seventh straight win since Spalletti's come in with his bald-headed right-thinkingness. They've been completely turned around. So that's seven straight wins now. But oh dear, Real Madrid scored seven goals against Celta Vigo at the weekend.
We are both.
Cristiano Ronaldo got four. Yeah, he's now the second top scorer in Spanish league history.
Yeah, both.
Took 62 games less than Messi to do it.
Is that because you don't like Cristiano or because
you're really
deriding
like
the
him.
Competitiveness
what?
Of the Spanish league? Which
I have a big problem.
Oh, come on. You can't.
It's
my
ridiculous.
Problem is with people who say they don't like Cristiano Ronaldo. If you like football, you've got to like somebody who's as good at it as Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah, but I don't think he's as good as people say. I've read an esteemed colleague talk about him as the greatest goal scorer in football history, and I fell off my chair when I read it. I thought, this is a joke or what?
Look at the numbers, Philippe. Look at the numbers.
What? If you want numbers, look at Arthur Rowley, the number of games he played for Shrewsbury Town and Leicester City.
How
he's
many?
Played more games than Cristiano Ronaldo. I think something like 700.
He's played more games?
Yeah.
Yeah, but what we're saying is that Ronaldo scores more goals in a shorter time than anybody. He's a machine. There are many things that one might not like about him, but in football terms, he scored
a free kick, didn't he, this against Celta?
I have to admit, I'm holding my hands up, I didn't see the goals.
I think, don't remember if it's the first, he scored a free kick, you know, one of those which goes above the wall. And so everybody say, what a fabulous free kick taker.
Yeah.
People forget that he had taken him about 70
free
kicks to actually score one.
Right, but he did score four goals in that game.
So bloody what?
Well, that's kind of what the game's
about. Drake scored 7 against Aston Villa. Yeah. German Defoe scored 5. So did Dimitar Berbatov.
He scores 4 on a regular basis. I mean, that's the difference. I mean, yes, he is the focal point of the best, perhaps the best resource club in the world. Mm. So that, therefore, the expectations.
Can I also point out, if the rest of the team were anything like as good as him, they'd be top of the league.
Yes. Yes.
So there you are.
Good point.
Gareth Bale, he's also in that team, but obviously he's not as good. But he has got 12 goals in his last 9 official games with Madrid.
And he can't take the penalties and he can't take the free kicks because it has to be Cristiano, you see.
That's going to be quite a battle because, of course, Roma, we've got Mo Salah, he's looking great. El Shaarawy, back to his best.
Yeah, I know. Come back. What's happened to him?
Oh, it's going to be a great game, that. And it'll probably end about 6, I'm going to say 6-2, probably. Maybe 6-4 if Roma are lucky. Be loads of goals, probably. Cut to people watching a 0-0.
Real already 2-0 up from the away leg.
That's true.
And therefore holding all the aces.
Very much so. Very much so. A tie-to-tie will be taking place in the lovely surroundings of St. Petersburg, where Zenit, under the auspices of departing manager Andrei Villas-Boas, and still sluggish from their winter break hibernation, will be trying to turn around a 1-0 deficit against the exciting Benfica, who, as we were discussing before, just gone top of the Liga NOS. My favourite title for a league in Europe.
Not just a league.
No, absolutely right. Is that all the Champions League ties for this midweek? It is, which means that we can have a little bit of music and then get on to teams who are battling to be in the Champions League next season.
Do you want a clue for the identity of our mystery player?
What's that you say, listeners? You would? Okay then, Philippe.
Would you like a clue about...
They just said yes.
Oh, I'm terribly sorry. Mm. I'll give you his initial.
Okay. Of the family. Which one?
It's H.
So the second letter.
It's the initial of his family name is H.
H.
H. Okay.
And it's a Premier League player, over 27, never played, not even on loan.
He's a great favourite of Ian McIntosh's.
Ooh.
Yeah. Who never misses a chance of mentioning
his
name. You got it?
Yep.
Okay.
Or rather, producer Ben has it, and he just said it in my ear. But now I've got it. I'm suffused by the warm glow of knowing the answer to your trivia question. Now, I'll move on to what I'd promised listeners, Simon, and that is that whole battle for fourth thing. Now, City solidified their position a little bit. West Ham 1 point behind them. United 3 points behind them. Of course, City it is that have the game in hand. Ooh, as do Liverpool, who are just 3 points behind Man United. This all, well, basically at the weekend, you probably saw City beat Villa 4-0. Not that much to say there, except what a lovely goal, that second one from Aguero when he does that little duet with David Silva. That was that could have been in our chat at the start about great goals the weekend.
Yeah, but goals scored at training sessions don't count, do they?
Fair enough. Then you had Everton losing against West Ham, and despite going 2-0 up and almost going 3-0 up when Lukaku had a penalty.
And on that subject,
yes,
there were a lot of controversial refereeing decisions. We'll come on to them, I think, particularly on Sunday.
Mm.
But what Adrian was doing, you know, 2 yards off his line when that penalty was struck, was, I mean, that to me was the clearest and worst refereeing decision of the weekend.
Right.
And most clearly, enormously influential to that match.
That's true.
Should have been retaken.
So are you saying that even if they'd gone 3-0 up, they wouldn't have thrown away the lead? It's Everton, remember?
Well, and Bilic said in his interview after the match that had they gone 3-0 down, it could have been anything. Could have been 3, could have been 4.
Right.
Certainly, they'd have been less likely to lose from 3-0 than 2.
Well, you'd think. Although, as I say, it is Everton. Bournemouth, remember that game? Chelsea. They throw away 2-goal leads with extraordinary regularity.
Done it 3 times, haven't they?
Yeah. It is times. 3 times, you're absolutely right. Certainly, last season, they dropped more points than any other team from winning positions. I'm pretty sure that that's true. Again, they're the kind of anti-Spurs in that regard, because Spurs come back. But anyway, so well done to West Ham. Brilliant. Was there some brilliant tactical decision from Slaven Bilic that turned that around, or did he just wait for Everton to do an Everton?
Well, Everton had a man sent off. And,
of course, yeah.
By the time that happened. Though, again, Morales, his first booking was for a dive. Mm. It did look like a dive.
Mm-hmm.
But I just noticed in the build-up to West Brom's goal on Sunday, that they had players throwing themselves all over the place in the build-up to that goal, and the referee waving play on. And it was hard to know. One of them, Fletcher...
Yeah, Darren Fletcher's one was particularly...
Fletcher leapt over a diving Schneiderlin. I mean, might have been a foul. Before that, Berahino had thrown himself to the ground upon the very, very vaguest hint of a touch from Blind.
Right.
So the day before, a guy had been booked and an attack had been stopped for a similar offence. And here, no cut, no whistle, no free kick, and from that very move, the decisive goal.
We just want consistency, Sam. That's what we're asking for. Consistency. Yeah. Anyway, well done to West Ham and that. And United, not so much, because, as you say, and they actually got a player sent off, Juan Mata, even though, as Van Gaal helpfully pointed out, the referee should know that he's a lovely chap and therefore you shouldn't give him a red card.
Bizarre. Bizarre. Like, there were two incredible post-match annoyed manager rants yesterday.
Alan Pardew?
Alan Pardew being the other. The idea that you shouldn't send a guy off because he's nice. I mean, firstly, a referee can't know every player, and Juan Mata is well known. And it would just end up with the big clubs being favoured at all times by referees, which may be in Van Gaal's interest, but really.
I think there is an element of that anyway in football, isn't there?
What it was very good news for believers in the old swings and roundabouts theory of football luck redistribution, in that last Wednesday, United played badly against Watford, but won because of a free kick scored by Juan Mata, and then here they were against West Brom, and they lost largely because of a free kick conceded by Juan Mata. And there you go, swings and roundabouts.
Yeah.
If it's the problem is that the referee can't know every player, that there should be some time allocated before a Premier League match where
for them to get to know each other.
Yeah, somebody can go in there and make a presentation about the squad.
Yeah.
Who's the prankster?
Sit down.
Who's
have
got
a
the great
tea.
Sense of humour?
Yeah.
Who's
have
the thickest of player? Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know, just put
this
it out
one's
there.
Got problems with his inner ear balance issues.
Yes.
That kind of thing.
Can I just quickly, just about West Ham.
Oh, yeah.
That just a little point, but in the same way that Mark Hughes' Stoke are kind of a reinvented, flairful football team, but still revert to Stoke 1.0 should they need to, West Ham very much have that in their locker too. And the first two goals to get back into the game both came from set pieces, both came from very kind of physical direct play in and around the box, and that is something that I think should be to Slaven Bilic's credit that he's got that flexibility to still do
could
that
could prove handy when they're in the Champions League next year in place of we'll see what happens with City, who did, as you say, get the win in that training session with Villa. But Man United now, with Van Gaal suddenly looking once more on shaky ground,
and Marcus Rashford's goal average now down to one a game.
And anyway, they've now got Liverpool 3 points behind them. Liverpool, after their win against Crystal Palace, whatever you thought about that Benteke penalty, it looked quite soft, did you think? Or,
well, firstly, Pardew's reaction to it. I mean, okay, so it's been a long time since Crystal Palace had won a game, and he thought, 1-0 and a man up, happy days, today is the day. And then he sees his team concede the first goal must have annoyed him. The keeper's just passing to Firmino. The second goal, 95th minute, a defender dives in and a penalty is conceded. I thought, okay, he must have been furious. And he's flinging his coat around and looking for basically someone to headbutt.
Yes.
And incidentally, I looked it up. It's 2 years ago, almost to the day, from the time he did actually headbutt someone. I don't know if it's something
Naylor. Naylor
of Hull City.
But I thought the attack on the referee after the game was a bit ludicrous.
Right. On poor Jamie Carragher, who had no way of defending himself. Well, I mean, apart from being on TV and that.
Yeah.
Anyway.
You can see, though, I mean, they've taken 2 points from their last 20, which
I've
is
got
the
a stat
worst.
About Hull.
Which means they've taken six fewer points than Newcastle, which is really saying something. So, and they're only on 33 points, and the way it's going, they could find themselves in pretty dire trouble.
Well,
in the
no, they're 9 points clear of the drop.
Yeah, okay.
But here's my stat.
As I said, they've taken 2 points out of 20.
Yeah, here's my stat, which is actually rather, it's had the wind taken out of itself a bit. But there is a team.
2 points out of 30. Excuse me.
Oh, it gets worse.
30.
There is only one team in the entire top four divisions of English football that hasn't won a single game in 2016. Step forward, Alan Pardew's Crystal Palace.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, is it even worth talking about the content of what he was rowing about? Or is
it
just plainly obvious rubbish?
It kind of is, but I wanted to move on to the massive game coming up on Thursday at Anfield. That Liverpool team, that's only 3 points behind Man United, etc. and so on, are going to be hosting them. hosting them, I beg your pardon, in the Europa League. Now, keen observers of Man United's away form will realise that they've only had one win in their last eight. But even keener observers will notice that, yeah,
they did the double over Liverpool this season.
Yeah, it was that one win in the last eight in the Premier League away from home was at Anfield, where they've also had a they've had 1-0 and 3-1 wins. So, huh? What do you think?
I don't know. I genuinely don't know, because on the one side it looks like United have got the measure of Liverpool this season. On the other, actually no, I think I'll go with United, because I don't think Liverpool have been all that impressive in the Europa League so far. They really just eked out a result against Augsburg, who didn't really impress. And I think, you know, I think the chances of Liverpool winning the Europa League pretty slim, even if they beat United. But if you were looking at emphasis, you'd probably go for trying to get into the top four. So, yeah, I think my gut will be with United.
Simon, what's your gut tell you?
Well, I mean, Liverpool are so wildly inconsistent that any kind of confident prediction is, you know, inherently idiotic. And to go from their disappointing display against Manchester City in the League Cup final, which I guess would suggest that you know, big pressure matches, they don't, you know, always raise their game. But then 4 days later, they play pretty well to kick Manchester City out of Anfield with a 3-0 win. I think Liverpool have it in them. What they have in the Europa League this year, they have played young teams, and their squad doesn't have the depth to play that to make that many changes and still beat top sides. Now, is this fixture big enough to force them to play their best team? Probably yes. Mm. So, I mean, I think that they have the potential to win. United also very inconsistent. So, you know, it's a really, you know, tantalising fixture for all, you know, however many times you've been bored rigid by Manchester United this season, that you still keep going back for more.
It'll be a good atmosphere at the ground, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Will Philippe Coutinho get a chance to play for Liverpool again in this one?
You would have thought that he was being rested partly for this, no?
Right, okay. It was a bit of a mystery, I must say, when I saw that he was on the bench.
Yeah, but he did come on second half, obviously, after the sending off. But I think, you know, the combination between him and Firmino and...
He came on just before the sending off, I think. Right. They took off Flanagan, brought him on. And the idea was that Milner was about to move to right back.
Oops.
But, yeah, 60 seconds later.
How things can change very quickly in this game. Right, well, very shortly, we're going to do another of those little pauses and then come back with the relegation battle and brand new MLS season. Not necessarily in that order, neither, listeners.
Hello, and welcome to another day of export opportunity. Global demand for UK food and drink is booming. Right now, a range of our goods are needed around the world, including healthy snacks, chocolate and craft beer. To find your opportunity, visit exportingisgreat.gov.uk.
Philippe, go on then. Astound and amaze us with the answer to your question.
Ian McIntosh's favourite player, Tony Hibbert.
It is Tony Hibbert.
I mean, you would have thought that he would be of the age that he would have had some loan experience when younger. But that shows David Moyes' unique bond with Tony Hibbert.
How did you stumble across that nugget?
I was actually sent that nugget of information by my friends of the Football Observatory, CRES, who have one of the most interesting weekly newsletters, which you can subscribe to for free.
They're the people who are like have that lab a mile underground in Geneva. Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah. Trying to find the Higgs boson.
Yes.
Well, they found it.
Cool. Brand new MLS season got underway this weekend. Could be a really important one for them as well.
Yeah.
2 decades they've been going, a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And it's doubled in size. Attendance is going up and up and up. No new teams this year, actually. Yeah. But there are more coming next year.
Expansion teams. I think there's one of those expansion teams has already sold 20,000 season tickets.
And a lot of the teams have sold out their season ticket or have massive waiting lists and stuff. And it's all looking good. The only thing is that, am I right in thinking that MLS is the most threatened by the rise of the Chinese
Why would
Super
that be?
League. Also because the Chinese are using the indefinite article, the, which is already a big blow for the Americans.
That's a massive advantage.
And also because they... Essentially, is it not the Americans' kind of talent pool that the Chinese have been poaching for most of all?
I thought not. I mean, they're paying way over the odds for players in their prime, whereas MLS is traditionally pay way over the odds for players past their prime.
Okay. Right.
I don't know.
With the exception, of course, of Jovinko.
Yes.
Who is only 28.
Yeah.
And Jermaine Defoe, who was probably about 28 when he went to Toronto. True.
Anyway, speaking of Jermaine Defoe, anyway, I'm really excited to see MLS back. And
me too. So, so happy.
And it should be a good season. And no doubt we'll have a proper look at how the things lie. LA Galaxy with a big opening weekend win, 4-1 against DC United. But we'll have a proper look at the whole season in prospect shortly, I'm sure. Maybe when there's an international week or something. But right now, it's time to talk the relegation battle.
It's time to talk turkeys.
Exactly. Exactly, Paul. Bottom four are now 8 points adrift. Mm. So it's three of that four, isn't it, really?
Yep.
Villa, Obs. And then who looks in the next worst shape, eh? Anybody?
Crystal Palace.
Newcastle for lead. Says Newcastle.
Newcastle have taken 6 more points out of the last 10 games than Crystal Palace.
Yeah, but Palace
if they take 6 more points out of their next 10 games, they'll still be behind them.
That's correct.
Thanks, Simon. Well done, Bournemouth.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Are they 9 points clear now, Bournemouth?
More than that. They're 11 points clear.
Oh, we're 11 points clear. That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, you've got to... I mean, I think it's... 9 away games with only 1 defeat, or maybe even unbeaten.
Wow!
I should know the full terms of that stat.
There's going to be quite a few candidates for manager of the year this season. Yeah. Bloody hell!
And he's done it. You know, he's done it with his major signings injured, obviously. But he's done, you know, the unheralded nature of almost all the key players in their teams is, you know, they've got no Premier League experience at all, and they look a very well drilled, very well organised Premier League outfit with their own style of football.
Thank goodness they changed that style of football when Martin Keown told them to.
Yeah, well, he didn't. You know, he didn't. And I know I get kind of in the comments, you know, banging on about Norwich, but we did change our style. And I think that has had a deleterious effect on us over time.
Because you signed loads of players in January.
And that hasn't worked.
Yeah.
Yeah, we signed loads of players in January. That
and you
hasn't
changed
worked.
Your style as well.
We changed the style after we got shellacked by Newcastle. We kind of thought, well, we've got to concentrate on actually being able to defend a little bit. Mm. And then we beat Swansea 1-0 at home by doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And so then it's like, okay, we're a defensive team now. And then we forgot how to attack. Mm. So it's like, we're an attacking team now. And now we can't do either.
And you lost this weekend at Swansea.
Yeah.
Mirroring, you know, the eerie symmetry and all that. So you're in the bottom three as well. Sunderland are a point clear of the bottom three after going to Southampton, where they lost 8-0 last season and drawing 1-1. Jermaine Defoe, with his 14th of the season, I have a Jermaine Defoe stat here, Simon.
Mm.
He scored more Premier League goals as a substitute than any other player in the history of the competition.
Jermaine Defoe. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
Apparently. Anyway, so they're a point. I mean, it's only a point, though. They are only a point above the bottom three.
But it is a mini league of three, because Villa aren't really in it. Mm. And then so it becomes about nerve. And
right. Now, what about Steve McLaren suggests to you that he might have lost his nerve, or the club have lost their nerve in terms of keeping him?
What, the fact that they had they're having emergency meetings to talk about whether to replace him, that might suggest.
Crisis talks. Was it Friday that he had that blazing row with a Daily Mail journalist, which is understandable, but a Daily Mail journalist in the press conference prior to the clash with Bournemouth, I think it was. And then the performance at home.
Well, then the players released a statement saying we're all behind him.
Oh, I missed that.
On Saturday morning.
Well, that's nice of them, though.
Well, it's nice of them until they then go out and do what they...
do week in, week out.
Yeah. And got turned over 3-1 at home by Bournemouth. Now, Newcastle's key fixtures are approaching fairly rapidly for them. They play Sunderland and Norwich.
Have they got Leicester next?
Leicester next, then Sunderland and Norwich. And the question is, I mean, you can maybe accept defeat at Leicester, mm-hmm. but those games against Sunderland and Norwich are going to define their season. And do they trust Steve McLaren to lead them into them?
if they don't, then the names of David Moyes and Rafa Benitez.
I love the name Rafa Benitez being associated with Newcastle. It's like that guy's desire to work in England is so strong that he will take any job, any potential blow to his reputation. But I could see him. David Moyes, I like David Moyes. I'm a fan of David Moyes. I'm not sure. I see him more as take a bit more time for him to get assist. Mm-hmm. I could see Benitez coming in, shutting up shop within a game and a half and actually kind of grinding out enough points to stay up.
Remember when he took over from Andre Villas-Boas when Chelsea had messed up significantly their Europa League
When he took over from Roberto Di Matteo.
It was Di Matteo when the first leg against Napoli had gone spectacularly wrong and he turned it around in the second.
Absolutely, yeah. They won 4-1 in the return.
After the
Champions League, and then they won the Europa League.
Right.
And finished third in the league.
Right, I got confused between the...
There is a lot of churn at Chelsea. It's possible.
Anyway, so that's quite a thought. And supposedly talks are going on at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, usually I think you would say that when you're into March and you're looking to change a manager, it's probably a waste, but...
They've done it before. Remember when Chris Hughton got the heave-ho and the brilliant Alan Shearer came in?
And that worked out well.
That was with 8 games to go. So they
was it?
Yeah.
Oh, so that right. Okay.
They've done it this late. They've done it even later.
John Carver was about the same sort of length at the end of last season.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, so it's just Newcastle's habit, and they've stayed up each time. So
well, no, they didn't with Shearer.
So it's just Newcastle's.
People often have a problem staying up with Shearer, particularly when he's on that display. That's cheap. I take that back.
But it's funny enough that means that my mistake gets in the final edit.
Okay, bingo. What more can be said about Newcastle?
They will give Leicester a good chance of improving their goal difference, which at the moment is favourable to Tottenham. And at the moment it's 7 goals in favour of Tottenham. So I wouldn't bet against Leicester putting 7 past Newcastle. I mean, the way they defended was... It's just appalling.
Newcastle?
Yes.
But they needed new defenders, I think everybody said. They didn't buy any. Is that his fault? If not, maybe he should have played Mitrovic anyway at the weekend.
But the thing I don't quite understand is they have got some really good quality players in that squad.
They've got enough players in that, even in that defensive unit, to have a half decent one. And he was caught. I think afterwards he named Jack Colback, John Joe Shelby, and Daryl Yanmat as being the only players who kind of played with pride. And you know, there may be something about that in the character in the team, but you just think if you are unable to get that into your team at large and consistently, if you have 3 leaders on the pitch and you don't have a character throughout the whole squad, then that reflects on the manager.
Mm. Well, all right then. That's today's Football Weekly. Many thanks to Philippe Auclair for being here with his questions and answers and all the stuff in between. Paul McKinney's going to be a tense end of the season for him, but he's still got a big smile on his face, you'll be delighted to know. Simon Burson, sagacity, and so much more. And producer Ben for chopping out all the bits that were even worse than the ones he left in, listeners. We'll be back on Thursday. Do join us then. Have a super time in the meanwhile.